CBSi on the World, I welcome John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, former ambassador to the United Nations, the Bush administration, commenting most recently on Russia. That's right, Russia, here in the spring of 2021, commenting in the National Review Online. John writes to the gray zone. What is the gray zone, and how does it provide an opportunity for the new Biden administration in dealing with Russian aggression? Good evening to you, John. The gray zone, what is it?
Well, glad to be with you, John. What happened when the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact disintegrated in the 1990s is that NATO expanded its membership to the east, including many countries formerly part of the Warsaw Pact. Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, the Baltic republics, formerly part of the Soviet Union. But it didn't complete the job. It didn't close the space between the new eastern border of NATO and the western border of Russia. And it left six countries, six newly independent states carved out of the Soviet Union in this gray zone and subject to Russian pressure, which Vladimir Putin has supplied over the past two decades as part of his effort to reestablish Russian hegemony in that space. And what that means is instability, the use of military force on Europe to change borders, which we had sworn in 1945 not to let happen again, and threatening the stability of Central and Eastern European countries and perhaps others. So the United States needs to lead NATO here to close that gap, to eliminate the gray zone and bring in, as appropriate, these countries into NATO.
Ukraine. We'll start with the big puzzle. Ukraine is fractured. Donbass is a Russian colony. At the same time, Kiev is not entirely stable. I'm being careful here. Not entirely stable. So at a low cost, because the Biden administration does not have a lot of money to spend anywhere, particularly at a low cost, how can Ukraine be ushered into NATO without Donbass or with it, John? How do we do this?
Well, I think it's going to take a period of time. And what I'm really calling for is a strategy. I don't think the Biden administration has a strategy on Russia. We know that the Trump administration didn't have a strategy on Russia. And we have to come to some kind of more global understanding of how we're going to deal with Russia rather than worrying about it country by country. My view is that the U.S. and the Europeans, who need to step up in this affair as well, ought to do whatever we can to help Ukraine through military assistance and diplomatic assistance to get the Russian elements and the support they're giving to separatists in eastern Ukraine out of the picture. And that will not solve the Crimea problem. The Crimea, which was part of Ukraine when it became independent, annexed militarily basically by Russia. They held a referendum, the result of which was foreordained, and yet that territory is still claimed by Ukraine. But if we could clear up what's sometimes called one of the frozen conflicts in eastern Ukraine, it would set the table to resolve Crimea one way or the other.
If I read you correctly, treating this one country at a time is not recommended. What you want is to treat all the gray zone together, to move all the gray zone into NATO. That would be, it's like naming the seven dwarfs. See if I can do it. Armenia, Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, Belarus. What's the sixth one, John? I've skipped something. I apologize.
Azerbaijan,
yes. Now, yeah. Azerbaijan is well along. For heaven's sakes, they've got car dealerships in the middle of town. Azerbaijan is well along. The recent conflict with Armenia suggests, of course, that Russia is still looking in and keeping peacekeepers in the disputed zone, Nagorno-Karabakh. Russia is still looking in and threatening. Is that an easy one to move, Azerbaijan? And Armenia has a large diaspora in the U.S. Is that an easy one to move into the U.S. orbit?
No, those are probably two of the harder ones, but I think Georgia, one of the three Caucasus nations, is about in the same place Ukraine is in some respects. It too has Russian military elements in the country. We have to help them again with in various ways to try and rectify that situation. But George W. Bush proposed in April of 2008 to bring Ukraine and Georgia into NATO, and the Europeans balked. I hope by now they've learned their lesson. Armenia and Azerbaijan, in part, I think, have to wait for the outcome of the Turkish election of 2023. It may seem a little remote, but this election could determine really whether Turkey stays in NATO, whether it still has aspirations to be part of the West, or whether President Erdogan's Islamicist inclinations take it out of the Western orbit. This would be a huge loss for the U.S. and NATO. By the way, it'd be a huge loss for the Turkish people, too. So it's one thing people need to be focused on is doing what we can to make sure there are free and fair elections in Turkey at the presidential level in 2023.
Belarus. There was an election in Belarus during the pandemic, and it was much upsetting to everyone. The Lukashenko, who was returned as the boss, suppressed an enormous number of aspirations in Belarus. Is it something that can be moved away from Moscow? Because last time I remember, John, there were some headlines about Russia putting a lot of troops into Belarus.
Yeah, if you had to pick one country that Putin would think of first to re-annex into Russia, in one way or another, it would be Belarus. And ironically here, the movement for a more democratic political system in Belarus, which may concern the authoritarian leader Lukashenko there to ask for Russian assistance, could ironically imperil Belarus's ability to separate from Moscow. Now, this is a good example. I'm not arguing that resolving the gray zone issue is easy, but strategically, we cannot afford to surrender Belarus to Russian domination. A look at the map and the risk it poses to the Baltic republics, Poland, and Ukraine, if an offensive Russian capability were inserted there, makes it pretty clear. I think Belarus ultimately wants to move to the West. I think that's what the people want. But we've got to make sure that in helping them achieve their aspirations for a democratic society, they don't ironically make themselves prisoners of Moscow.
John, does turmoil around the edges of Russian Federation, does that help Putin?
Well, in the short term, it allows him, as many authoritarian leaders have done over the centuries, is to increase their own domestic popularity by pointing to a threat from outside. And in part, that's what the frozen conflicts that Putin has created or helped been complicit in, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Moldova, Ukraine, and others. It gives him an excuse to intervene with Russian force if need be, and use that for his own domestic political purposes at home. And Putin plays a very good game with a very weak hand. So this is something that's going to require some time and attention. Secretary of State Antony Blinken just went to Ukraine recently, but he offered really nothing but diplomatic pabulum, no new ideas. And I think Putin watched that and said to himself, I've got some breathing space here because the Biden administration's not bringing anything new.
So right now there is no fixed Biden policy about Moscow. Is that correct, John? It's in development.
Yeah, I don't think Biden has a strategy on Russia. I don't think he has a strategy on China.
John Bolton, former National Security Advisor for the Trump administration, former ambassador to the United Nations for the Bush administration, writing at the National Review Online about the gray zone of Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.